calling the Environment Policy and Oversight Committee to order. And today we, I guess before we move on, we do need to approve the minutes of March 4th, 2010. And Representative Anderson, sorry to call on you when you have your mouth full, but President Anderson moves the minutes of March 4th. Okay, and we do need to amend the minutes before we do pass them. Representative Wagenius was present, so we are going to move it to count her as present. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. And to the minutes themselves, all those in favor of the minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails and the minutes are adopted.
So, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Before we get started, Gardner, can we all wish Representative Bigham a happy birthday?
Oh, Representative Bigham, happy birthday.
Where's the trees?
So,
I brought them on Monday.
Oh, that
you can bring them on Thursday.
Uh-huh.
So, we are going to be starting with House File 3084. Representative Dietrich, are you in the House? There she is. Welcome, Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And I will move House File 3084 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. Representative Dietrich, to the bill.
Perfect. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, House File 3084 is a resolution, and in this resolution, we ask Congress to appropriate money and negotiate with the state of Minnesota on the sale and exchange of school trust lands in the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness. Currently, there are 86,000 acres of school trust lands that lie in the Boundary Waters Canoe Area. Because of its wilderness designation, the trust lands cannot earn revenue. And if you would look in your packets, we have a map indicating the Boundary Waters, I'm sorry, the school trust lands within the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness.
I guess, I don't think we have the map in our packets. They're being passed around.
Okay, I'm sorry, your maps are being passed around. Since we cannot manage these school trust lands to earn income, the trust obligation of the state is not being met. And so what this resolution does is it affirms that the Permanent School Fund Advisory Committee should include a combination of a land sale and land swap exchange of the school trust lands that lie in the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness for federal lands outside of the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness. Many of you will remember that there have been previous attempts to do this. In 1997, proposals were made to allow the federal government land managers to purchase the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness lands. Unfortunately, the Minnesota legislature at that time rejected this offer. And in your packets, you have a timeline of events that surround that issue in 19 before and after. So, as a result of the 2008 school trust lands legislation that many of you voted for, the Permanent School Fund Advisory Committee expanded its membership, and we formed four subcommittees. One of the subcommittees that I serve on is the sale and exchange of property in Boundary Waters Canoe Area. We have met regularly over the 2009 interim, and the committee has concluded to resolve the issue by proposing a hybrid solution of approximately one-third land being exchanged and two-thirds land being sold to the federal government. The subcommittee is prepared to continue working with the United States Forest Service and other appropriate stakeholders. The subcommittee recommends that the DNR and the United States Forestry Services pursue exchanges outside the Boundary Waters Canoe Area to consolidate ownership and improve the management efficiency. And to that point, you might remember reading in several reports from the legislative auditor that the DNR should continue to try to consolidate lands to avoid this inefficient checkerboard approach to managing lands. And this proposal, its ultimate goal would be to help some of that. This resolution to be passed by the Minnesota legislature would seek removal of the school trust lands from the Boundary Waters Canoe area. And we need this resolution to signal a support to the Minnesota congressional delegation. We feel on the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Subcommittee that the timing is right. The United States Forest Services is a willing partner, and we have members of Congress in key leadership positions to help facilitate a resolution this time. This hybrid approach will result in significant revenue to the school trust land fund. We anticipate it could be between $70 to $80 million deposited into the school trust land fund. And it would also exchange ownership and consolidation of ownership of land outside the Boundary Water Canoe area. And Mr. Chairman, if I may, one last point to that. When I mentioned the legislative auditor's report, one piece that I haven't brought up yet is that the legislative auditor in 1998 recommended that the DNR should continue to pursue the compensation to the permanent school fund for the trust land in the Boundary Waters Canoe area. If the federal government purchased some or all of the land would be the most realistic response, then it should be pursued. And so that's what we are here today is to continue pursuing that option. So thank you, Mr. Chairman. With that, I'd like to call on Grace Kelleher, and she would like to speak in favor of the resolution.
Okay, thank you, Representative Dietrich. And I guess because we have a number of bills on the agenda today, I think if there's no opposition to the bills, we'll probably just move forward with the vote, Ms. Kelleher, if that's okay. And I would like to ask if there is any opposition. If there is, then we'll move forward with the testimony. But is there any opposition at all to the bill? Okay, seeing none. Thank you, Representative Dietrich, Ms. Kelleher. And I would renew the motion that House File 3084 be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails and the bill is passed.
Thank you. Very efficient, you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Moving on to the next bill, House File 2894, Representative Marquardt. And I will move that House File 2894 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on State and Local Government Operations Reform, Technology, and Elections. Welcome, Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. And I do have here Mr. Ron Harnack, who's the project coordinator with the Red River Watershed Management Board. And also, for any questions, have John Rochling, who's from the Boise Sioux Watershed District, and Ray Bone, who's the head of the Minnesota Association of Watershed Districts. So, members, I think House File 2894 is a very important piece to our flood prevention and damage reduction efforts around the state and including the Red River Valley. And Mr. Chair, I know a few weeks ago you had an excellent meeting on looking at all the efforts that were going on in the Red River Valley as far as flood reduction. And one of the key components that we were looking at was impoundments, retention, storage, which is a real key. And that's a very important part of watershed districts, is planning, construction, maintenance of water storage projects, which can really, if it's done right upstream, can really prevent damage further downstream. And so that's the reason why we're looking at increasing the borrowing authority and the amount of money they can have on hand from $600,000 to $2 million. And some of the reasons for that is that it's when they do these impoundments or storage, they need the watershed district need to acquire land. And timing is of the essence. They need to try to do that as quickly as possible and so forth. And they need to have these loans to secure the purchase agreements on these lands. And there used to be a little more money out there that they could plug into as far as taking care of the loans, but a lot of those have been used up, like some of the Red River boards that through projects and so forth, and the dollars just aren't there. Also, with the increase in the price of land, let's say $3,000 an acre, and many of these projects going between 400 to 1,500 acres, you know, just 500 to 600 acres at $3,000 is $2 million. So it can go very quickly. So by upping this to $2 million, we feel that this will allow the watershed districts to do more, to more aggressively pursue these projects, and move more quickly in providing storage and solving the entire flood reduction problem and so forth. So if there's any questions, I do have Mr. Harnack here, but that's really the gist of the bill, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Marquardt. Any questions? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple questions, Mr. Harnack. Just what's the history on this amount?
Mr. Harnack.
Mr. Chair, Ron Harnack with the Red River Watershed Management Board. There has been a history. Prior to 1978, there was a $20,000 cap on it. That was adjusted to $50,000 in 1978, to $200,000 in 1988, and then in 2008, it was up from $200,000 to $600,000, and that's the current cap on the borrowing for the watershed districts.
Representative Hansen.
And then a follow-up, Mr. Chair. Mr. Harnack, so The $2 million would go essentially for cash flow. If you've got a property for an impoundment, the watershed district could borrow or go to a local bank, borrow, and then sign the purchase agreement. If those dollars are reimbursed with, my question is on the bondability. If we are bonding for impoundments, can we do that, or does the bond dollar have to go directly to the purchase of the property rather than for loan repayment?
Mr. Harnack.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen, in the history of the way we've dealt with it, the acquisition, whether it's borrowing short-term or long-term, that is still eligible for the flood damage reduction grant program that comes through DNR. The issue is typically we have to have the purchase agreements, interest in the land, and often that comes prior to the final design and some of these things being done, because when the land is available, it's a one-shot deal. You either have the ability to acquire it, or it could be substantially delayed or lost altogether. And with the emphasis that we're putting on flood storage in the basin, the land acquisition is a very, very critical first step in being able to get these projects moving forward aggressively.
Representative Hansen.
And maybe a follow-up, if Mr. Lockesmo could come forward from DNR, I'd like to hear from the agency on if we put bond dollars into flood damage reduction grants and we have the loan authority increased for the watershed district, if that system works for bonding.
Mr. Lockesmo.
Mr. Chairman, Kent Lockesmo in DNR Waters. And Representative Hansen, the process that has worked so far, so I don't see the changing the dollar threshold that would impact that. It would be a benefit to the local district.
Representative Hansen.
All I needed to know.
Okay. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Does this increase, could it result in some substantial levy increases to residents of the districts, or how are these paid back?
Mr. Harnack.
Mr. Chairman and Representative, it is paid back in a couple of ways. One is through partial reimbursements through the Flood Damage Reduction Grant Program, partial through the Red River Watershed Management's current levy, and then the balance would be repaid through the watershed district's current construction fund and existing levies. This does not have a increase in property taxes associated with it. Its repayment is within the scope of the existing levy authorities.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chair, I think, just to clarify, Representative Anderson, I mean, the debt service that would be carried would have to be levied somehow. So there, I think there could be a potential increase in property taxes. It's something, I think there is that potential, just, I don't know how big of a difference, but there might be a larger debt service that might have to be carried. So.
And any other questions at all? Okay, Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Marquardt, or if your witness want to address this, but is this something that all of the watershed districts are seeking, or is this more specific to certain areas where this is bumping up against the ceiling has been a problem?
Mr. Chair, Representative Loon, in talking to Mr. Bone, who's with the Minnesota Association of Watershed Districts, he said this is one of their top priorities statewide, and he's right here if you wanted him to testify. So this is something that all watershed districts are looking at, is, you know, it's just this whole issue of, you know, trying to reduce flood damage and that around the state, and the fact that we're in a wet cycle right now, and these 100-year floods are coming every few years. And you know, they're trying to step up these projects and trying to have the dollars to do that. So,
any other questions? Seeing none, I will renew the motion that House File 2894 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on State and Local Government. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed? Motion prevails. Bill is passed. Thank you, Representative Marquardt.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you so much.
Moving on to House File 3152, Representative Bunn. And Representative Bunn, I will move House File 3152 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. And I understand you have an amendment as well.
Yes. So Mr. Chair and members, I have the A-10-2290 amendment. Shall we put it in that form that we intend to discuss it in?
Sure. And I will move the A-10-2290 amendment to put it in the shape and form that the author would like. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted, and Representative Bunn to the bill as amended.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this is an issue that was brought to me by a particular constituent with an issue in the town of the city of Bayport. But in working with the DNR on this issue, we come to find that it will address and help clean up a situation with multiple properties, five or more so in the state, not just this individual property. This is an issue into which there was some historical confusion in terms of local authorities and the DNR as to the proper designation of a district. In this particular case, the district had been, the DNR viewed it as rural, but when the city of Bayport annexed this area along the river in 1982, from that point of annexation onwards, they viewed it as a commercial property. They annexed it as such. They also claimed that the DNR approved that annexation at that time. But the property then, for a period of time, had some vacancy, and so the DNR considered it to have reverted to rural. The current owner had some issues about wanting to improve the property, and it was only when this was brought forward that they discovered that there had been this confusion historically over it, and there was some disagreement between the city and the DNR about this. That discussion has taken place. The DNR is supportive of this change, not only to address this problem with this property, but with the others I mentioned, both the private property in Scandia and also some nonprofit properties, some camps and others that have a problem with this. What the amendment did was to go into further to tighten the language such that the property had to be in this status not only in when the original law in 1974 was passed, but also that it continues in use now, so properties couldn't be brought back online to fall under this exception, that in fact it had to be properties that were still in the use that they were earlier for them to be included under this. So it narrows and tightens it further to make sure it has the intended purpose. I have with me today both the business owner with this particular property, but also the city of Bayport and also the DNR to attest to their support of this legislation and the intent. If you want to have the testimony, it wasn't clear that you did.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And I think we'll, again, see if there's any opposition at all. Is there any opposition to this bill? Okay, seeing none, we'll take questions, and of course, the questions can be directed towards those that you have up front as well. So, Representative McNamara.
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't know that we need any testimony, but if the DNR could just step down and get them on the tape quick, that they're on board might be a good idea.
Sure. Mr. Lacusmo.
Mr. Chairman, Kent Lacusmo from DNR. And yes, we helped work on this language, and we support the bill as drafted.
Thank you. Any questions at all for the author or the others? Okay, seeing none, I will then renew the motion that House File 3152, as amended, be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register.
Thank you very much.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. Bill is passed. Thank you, Representative Bond.
Members.
Next, we have House File 2878, Representative Pepin. And Representative Bigham.
Yep, I can move House File 2878 to be referred to the General Register.
Representative Bigham moves that the House File 2878 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register.
And Mr. Chair, I would, when Representative Pepin is ready, I can move the A1 Amendment 42.
Okay, and Representative Pepin, would you like to have the A1 Amendment moved?
I would like it moved to get it in the shape that we want to discuss it in.
Okay, Representative Bigham.
Guys, we'll move the A1 amendment.
Okay, Representative Bigham moves the A1 amendment to get it in the shape and form that the author would like. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion fails. The amendment is adopted. And Representative Pepin to the bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bill is pretty simple. The city of Dayton is on the Mississippi River, and it would like to have the opportunity to commercially develop, but it can't because it's in a wild scenic regulation area. So this bill will allow the city to be exempted under shoreline rules, as virtually all river cities are ruled. And I have with me Erin Stora from the city of Dayton, who will provide a little bit more detail.
Good evening, Mr. Chair and representatives. Again, my name is Erin Stora. I'm the Assistant City Administrator for the city of Dayton. As Representative Pepin stated, Dayton lies on the historic village in Dayton lies on the confluence of the Crow and Mississippi Rivers, and this bill specifically is for Dayton's historic village. And as Representative Pepin has said, wild and scenic rules have typically exempted historic villages along the river where wild and scenic designations lie. However, in the past, I don't know if it's that there wasn't much development in this area. Dayton was not exempted. Through the comprehensive planning process, the city has contemplated significant redevelopment in the area as it was platted in the 1850s, and most of it is pretty dilapidated at this time. So the city of Dayton would really appreciate your support in supporting this bill that would allow us to have commercial development and redevelopment in that area that would be under shoreland dimensional standards and rules. And I can take any questions.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Stora. And Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Representative Pepner, the testifier. What makes this the historic village of Dayton?
It's over 150 years old. So all the buildings and there's a church. It's a specific boundary in the city that has been labeled that for over 150 years. So.
And Mr. Chair, so would any of the historic buildings be removed to do this, or?
Ms. Dora.
Yes, I do believe that we would not remove any of the historic buildings. We do have one church on the historic register, but no other buildings. I don't see that the church would ever be removed, but we do have some seriously dilapidated housing in the area.
Okay, well, Mr. Chair, I was just trying to determine whether there would be anything historic there if you commercially developed it, but it sounds like you're getting rid of some of the housing. And okay, thank you.
And Mr. Chair,
Representative,
this is language that was brought to us by Mr. Luxmo from the DNR, and that they, my understanding is, they don't oppose this change.
That doesn't help.
Any other questions for the testifiers? Is there any opposition at all? Okay, seeing no opposition.
I'll renew my motion, Mr. Chair, that House File 2878 be, as amended, be referred to the General Register.
Okay. Okay, Representative Bigum renews her motion that House File 2878, as amended, be referred to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Pepin. We're going to take things out of order just a little bit. Representative Dill. And if you will move the adoption of the Game Fish and Forestry Division reports for House File 3051 and House File 3124.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Egan, that would be my motion.
Okay.
Which would be the Game and Fish and the Lands Bill. Is that correct?
That is correct. And Representative Dill moves the adoption of the Game Fish and Forestry Division reports for House File 3051 and 3124. And again, this is just to get the bill before us, the bills before us, so that we can take action. So it's just bringing them before us. So we're not actually taking a vote on the actual bill itself. We're just bringing it before us.
Mr. Chair, to the author,
yes,
is
Representative McNamara.
Is the intent to blend them into one bill? I misunderstood.
No.
Okay, thank you.
No, this is just to get both of them before us, so we can do that in one motion. So all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. The bills are now before us. And Representative Dill, if you would want to move House File 3051.
Okay. And that, I believe, the motion would be move House File 3051, recommend to pass, and go to Environment Finance.
That is correct. Representative
Well, Committee on Finance. Committee. Okay, members.
So Representative Dill moves House File 3051. Be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Finance.
This bill, thank you, Chair Egan. The bill was fully vetted in the division just yesterday, and the provisions in it cover a vast variety of transactions that have to do with counties and the states, state parks, things of that nature. There is one controversial or a provision that has some controversy in it, and that has to do with the section 2 of the bill, which is on page 1, starting on line 1.17, regarding the Hill Annex Mine site, which is currently a state park. But there are still that state park was, well, actually, I'm going to have someone from the Historical Society come down and give a very brief explanation of what the problem is with this provision from their perspective. The DNR is good with this language, but they have their own opinion of that. Welcome again.
Okay, welcome to the committee. You can state your name for the tape.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Michael Fox. I'm Deputy Director for Programs at the Minnesota Historical Society, and I'm here to testify today against Section 2 and ask that you either remove it from the bill or consider alternative language. We feel that Section 2 creates an extremely bad precedent by eliminating an important review process for cultural resources for a specific project for the Hill Annex Mine. In testimony last evening at the Game and Fish Division, I reported that we had suggested alternative language that would keep the discussion going between the Society and the Department. We have since learned the Department is not interested in pursuing alternative language. We're still willing to work with them to draft mutually acceptable language if that is possible. But if not, we respectfully request that you remove Section 2 from the bill.
Okay. Representative Dill, did you have any comments to that?
I'm not willing to make that, as the author of the bill, I'm not willing to remove that section at this time. I'm hoping that as the bill progresses forward, the Historical Society said the DNR isn't interested in any additional language. We might be able to convince some type of a compromise as we move forward. So I'm not intending to make a motion to remove Section 2 at this time.
Okay.
Continue to progress the bill as it is, although certainly discuss some other member making that motion.
Okay. Representative Hansen, did you
I'd make the motion to remove Section 2, and part of the purpose is to have DNR testify on that event.
Okay. And Representative Hansen moves to remove Section 5, and if someone can make, Section 2.
Section 2.
And if somebody from the DNR would want to testify to it. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Kathy Lewis, Assistant Director with the Division of Lands and Minerals, DNR. What we ask for this language for is we believe there's three legislative directions that have been given regarding this piece of property. This is school trust land. One of the legislative directions is to generate revenue for the school fund. We have a stockpile on the property that a company would be interested in mining, and it would generate about $9 million for the school fund, and there's a taconite resource under that property. The Gila Annex Mine State Park, when it was created, legislative direction is that mining is allowed in the park, so that was recognized when the state park was created. We also recognize that it's a historic site, and that that legislative direction is to mitigate and avert avert adverse impacts to historic sites. So there's a conflict in statute in the history aspects versus the mining aspects. And we believe that this is basically an issue for the legislature to decide, since it's a statutory conflict. The language that we were offered yesterday is, well, go do a study. It's going to cost you about $20,000. It's going to take a year. And we're saying, okay, we can go do that, but we don't have the $20,000 to go do that, and we have this opportunity to start generating for the school fund. And that's the issue we thought we should bring forward and let the legislature decide what the next step should be. Okay.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments for the amendment, the oral amendment? Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Deal, can you let us know quickly just what's going on here? There's a pile of taconite that before wasn't good enough, and now it. Can you give us real quick the deal here?
Representative Dale.
Back in the early days of mining, there was a material that was considered too low a grade to either make into steel right from the ground or to make it into to make taconite pellets from it or from the taconite deposit. It was stockpiled, basically made into, you know, if you've driven up there, you see mountains of this stuff. Well, technology being what it is and the development of technology, there's a new company. It happened to be the same principal that started a Masaba Nugget. You'll remember the many discussions that we had on Masaba Nugget. He has since sold that company, and he started a new company with another new technology, which is able to sort through the junkyard of sorts of reject material and take out the taconite vines and make concentrate to make steel from it, or to make taconite. And so it's a whole new technology. There's $6 or $7 million worth of reject material there. And then underneath the reject material, I call it reject material, other people call it stockpile. Underneath that then is a viable taconite resource that will probably be mined by one of the taconite companies once it's uncovered, maybe even Esser Steel, who is very nearby with some other mining properties.
Representative Mack.
A quick follow-up. Who would get the money?
That's a school trust, Chair Ekin, that's a school trust section, and that would, the money would go to the school trust less the fees that are the less the certified cost.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative Hansen.
Just to follow up from the Historical Society, what is involved with the section that's being referenced? I mean, what are your requirements?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, the process is very simple. We do this about 20. I checked last year, we did such reviews 27 times during the previous fiscal year. All of them resolved successfully. It's a matter of having a conversation. First of all, I want to say that we have no problem with the mining or the tailing or the tails or whatever are there. This is about interpreting a state park that was created specifically to provide the public with an opportunity to witness and experience Minnesota's open pit mining industry. And that's very clear. The Assistant Director of Commission described this as a either-or situation. We simply don't think it's an either-or. It's either you have the review or you don't have the review. I think the original bill was very clear that both these were goals for this park, and we think that we can do that. We can have a process for developing an interpretive program that lets the public understand what they're seeing at this site, which is now being restored as an active mining operation after many years. That's all we're talking about, is having a conversation about how we would do that, working with the department to come up with a bill. The department says that they want to exempt. Obviously, the intent of this legislation is to exempt them from that conversation.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Fox. Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, and this seems to have a big fiscal impact, and it's a policy matter. We're in the policy committee now. I think it would be good if the Department of Natural Resources and the Minnesota Historical Society would continue the conversation on the way to the health, on the way to the fiscal committee, and maybe involve Representative Dill and Representative Wagenius in that conversation. So I'll withdraw the amendment for this time and hope that there can be some more communication on this.
Yeah, Representative Hansen removes his motion. And any other questions? Representative Bigham.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dill, can you help me with Section 9? It looks like you're deleting land from state parks, specifically in Subdivision 1, it's Afton State Park. Just wondering what that does.
There are lands, Chair and Representative Bigham, there are lands around the state that from time to time aren't considered integral to the workings of a state park. They were acquired with a purpose in mind, and then the purpose didn't actually develop. And if you go up to, for example, Split Rock, I'm familiar with that in my district, there was a parcel, I believe it was 40 acres, that was acquired in Split Rock where there was going to be an RV campground built. The location of the RV campground is now somewhere else. And so now there's not a need for that land at this point, so now they're returning it back to private ownership or to county ownership or whoever they got it from originally or through a sale.
And Representative McNamara.
Well, to Representative Bingham's point, it's actually developed land now. It's a housing development, about 7 different homes. So it's alongside Afton Alps Ski Resort. The whole ski resort's in the footprint of the state park, and this land was alongside it. But I'm assuming the Alps at one time sold these lots off, so it's all homes now. It wouldn't be appropriate to be part of the park anymore.
Okay. Any other questions?
Mr. Chair, I just want to have some amendments. Yes. And also, I just want to add one more thing. You'll also see in the bill that there are additions to state parks, and from time to time there are lands that become available that we want to add. So in this instance, in this bill, we're taking out some that we don't need and we're adding some in that we do need. So it's kind of a two different places, but it's that's how that system is working.
Okay. And thank you. And Representative Hansen has one more question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Dill, I apologize for, I was in a couple committees last night, so I missed Section 12, the savings to the general fund section, and then I know this has been debated in prior sessions or prior years here, but so this Section 12 would allow going below the minimum sale price. Is that what that does? Or?
Representative Dill.
That is correct.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I just have a general question. Maybe there's not a real good answer, but an observation. We're selling land for less than the appraised price, but buying it for more than the appraised price. I kind of wonder what that means in the context of our budget future here as we go forward and being disciplined and responsible to the taxpayers.
Representative Dill.
I don't have an answer to that and don't have a comment.
Representative Wagenius.
On this particular one, this is totally general. It doesn't prescribe specific lands. It seems to me that if you are going to opt to put stuff on the market for less than the appraised value, the public ought to know which lands and not just give a blanket you can sell. So I think before we come to the next committee, it would be helpful to know exactly what lands they are and probably include them in the bill if we're going to go in that route.
I think, Mr. Chair and Representative Guineas, I think that we could actually not answer on a parcel-specific basis, but we could answer that question and how they advertise that. And this, of course, is land that is sold, proposed to be sold under appraised value after it's already been offered at appraised value. And so now we're trying to go to a more liquidated state. And Mr. Meyer is here to kind of answer that question.
Mr. Chair, members of the record, Bob, Department of Natural Resources, and just let me clarify this section and what its intentions are. Currently, we have over $8 million worth of state land available for sale over the counter for one to buy to help us meet that $2.4 million goal of paying off previous spending from the old 405 biennium. We can't sell any of that right now. We are required by law to start our bidding at the appraised value. What we're trying to do here is have this piece, and I think we need to work on it as it moves forward, to allow us to sell land holdings below appraised value until we reach the amount needed to pay off the previous spending. And I know this language doesn't do that, and we need to address that. The intentions are that as we have this sale, as soon as we reach that dollar amount, we will stop the auction and all bidding will be done, and we will go back to the law as it is for starting at appraised value. This is clearly done, solely done, I should say, to help us achieve the goal of the land sales that we need. And I will work on language between now, and I believe we're going to go to Representative Wagenius's committee on this section that will clearly state that. I think we're working on language in the Senate bill that will clarify that, that we can insert here as well.
Thank you, Mr. Meyer. Thank you. Representative Saylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for Mr. Meyer, do you have just any ballpark idea of how much less money or less revenues might be anticipated? You know, is there some sort of a cap on how low you're going to go below the appraised value? Is it 10%? Is it, 5%? I'm just, concerned about real garage sale prices going on. So I'd like to know what your plans are.
Mr. Chair, Representative Saylor, I don't have that specifically right now, but we share the same concern. We need to come at this as being the authorized agent and trying to figure out how do we do this fiduciarily, but also meet the goals that we have. Because if we don't reach this by 2011, it will be whatever the balance is, 98% of that balance will be unallotted from the DNR budget additionally. So we need, I can get back to you on that, what parameters we would put on this.
Representative Wagenius.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Saylor brings up an interesting question. I mean, we're going back to the laws of 2005 that we haven't satisfied. It's 2010. And land prices are probably as low as they're going to get. So to sell land this year seems more problematic than if we waited this long. Well, why not wait one more year? Because I think everybody recognizes we're at the bottom of the trough, and I understand some of this is suburban land. Am I correct about that?
Yes, ma'am.
It's going to be a ripe land for developers, but not in this market. So I am questioning the wisdom of doing it this year. I'm not maybe questioning the wisdom of never doing this kind of thing, but of doing it this year does not seem, I mean, that's something we've got to talk about as in general in this committee and on finance.
And Mr. Martin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, and those are excellent points. It's something that we're concerned about as well. I think what we're trying to get is the authority to do this. We would try to wait as long as possible with market conditions improving, come back next year. The sunset provision, the legislature extended that land sale provision, I believe, until 2011, the end of 2011 biennium. So we would try to postpone as long as we could.
Representative Wagenius.
But your Section 12 doesn't say we will try to postpone it as long as possible. And I don't know if anybody's had any discussions about putting off your for another year, because somebody's going to make a bonanza out of this. And is that what we, if you think about the taxpayers, is it a good idea to provide a bonanza to somebody and then the taxpayers are going to have to cough up extra money later? I think that's a question that we all have. That's not one of us answering, but we all have the answer.
Mr. Chair, we will work on language with Representative Wagenius and others to satisfy those concerns between now and the hearing in the Environment Finance Committee, if the committee so wishes, and we can address that issue at that point in time.
Any other questions? Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and for Commissioner Meyer, I believe that the biggest parcel is actually right in the Hastings WMA that we're talking about, that potentially I think was going to satisfy a vast big part of what we're trying to do. I just hope that I can be involved too, because I don't want to see us, we've had land values drop in some cases 40% for some of the land in our area, and I would hope that we're not going to do that. So I think it'd be more appropriate in the Finance Committee, but along the way, let's talk about, because I'd much rather see us delay it than sale and then have people, my neighbors, saying, my goodness, you sold land for half what if you would have waited another year or two. Right now, it's just keeping the turkeys and deer there, so it's not going to hurt anything to sit for another year.
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, we will do, and anyone else, we will draft some proposed legislation, and I will visit with some of you. If I don't visit with you, please let me know, and I will come by and see you. I try to talk with most of you as much as possible, so we will come up with a solution and run it by you. If maybe I'll just email it to all of you. Might be the easiest thing to do.
Any other questions? Representative Deal?
I have some amendments.
Okay. We will refer to the A-10-2293.
We'd like to move the A-10-2293 amendment. This is regarding stream easements, and Mr. Bogus is here to answer any questions.
Okay. August, do you want to step forward? Any questions at all for Mr. Bogus? If you want to just give a very brief description.
Mr. Chair and members, for the record, Ed Bogus, DNR, Division of Fish and Wildlife, and this is just a technical change related to the formula for the trout stream easements. The Department of Revenue provides the data that goes into that formula, at least part of that formula, and they've changed their mini abstract survey categories, and this would just update those to fit their current categories, and then also provide some flexibility if they change them in the future for us to basically use their data to provide the most reasonable substitute for those values.
Okay, any questions for Mr. Bogus? Okay, seeing none, Representative Dole renews his motion to pass the A-10-2293 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. And Representative Dole.
To the A-10-2299 amendment, I'd like to move that before the committee.
Representative Dole moves the A-10-2299 amendment.
And this is an amendment that I'm bringing forward for Representative Morrow regarding surplus state land acquisition in Nicollet County. The DNR and the Representative Morrow have worked on this jointly and have brought this to us for adoption. And I believe that Ms. Lewis could give us a head shake on whether or not this is good. You don't know? Oh, I'm sorry. It was the Department of Administration that brought this forward to us. Is there someone here from the Department of Administration? Doesn't appear that there is. But the amendment was brought to us by, I know that they were working on it and that the language came to us from the Department of Admin.
Okay. Are there any questions at all? Okay, seeing none, Representative Dell renews this motion on the A-10-2299 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. And I have an amendment as well. I will move the H-3051A2 amendment. This amendment deals with a sale of surplus land in Clearwater County to the White Earth Tribe, sale for $26,500. It was currently used as a fire station by the DNR. It's going to be continued to be used for that purpose, and it's also going to allow DNR to use it, as I understand, for those purposes as well. And it's about 22 acres that's being purchased here. So, any questions at all on the amendment? Okay, seeing none, I will renew the motion for the H3051A2 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Dill, I understand that you have another committee that you have to be in right now.
I told them that I was going to go ahead and do the game and fish bill, so it's up to you. I need to go ahead and finish this bill, so I'd like to move, renew my motion for 3051 to be recommended to pass as amended and sent to the Environment Finance Committee.
Okay. Representative Diller renews his motion that House File 3051 as amended be recommended to pass to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. The bill is passed. And Representative Dill, if you want to continue, we can do the next bill.
Okay, the next bill, I'd like to move House File 3124, which is known as the Omnibus Game and Fish Bill. And there are three amendments to the bill that I'd like to get on the bill, and then we can go to the bill if that's appropriate. Okay, the first, Representative Falk, is he here?
Yeah. And I will, Representative Dill moves that House File 3124 recommend to pass and refer to the Committee on State and Local Government. And is Representative Falk here? There you are. Okay. If you want to speak just briefly on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr.
A9
Chair.
Amendment.
This was some language you worked out with the DNR and the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association last night. We would have included it, but just for lack of time to get it drafted and trying to be respectful of the staff, we opted to put it in here. But it just allows for the quartering of deer, but in specific areas that you'd have to leave the head or other identifying organs attached to help for when a deer is tagged.
Representative McNamara.
Mr. Chair, I seem to have misplaced the amendment. I'm wondering if Representative Falk could read the amendment.
Okay, it should be in the packet. The
we all missed it on this side, Mr.
Okay.
Chair.
Okay.
Representative McNamara, I'd be happy to have one of the pages walk you over my copy if you would like.
Oh, I found it. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I was wondering, Mr. Chair, if he had any diagrams on how this would be accomplished that he could share with the committee.
I have since forgotten all my high school anatomy classes, but I believe Major Smith is willing and ready to help share.
Okay, any other comments or questions on the A9 amendment? Was that moved, Representative Falk?
If not, I will move the H3124 A9 amendment to the bill. It's a
good bill. Okay, and seeing no other questions or comments, I will, Representative Falk renews his motion to pass the A9 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dill.
I'd like to move the 3124A8 amendment.
Okay, Representative Dill moves the 3124A8 amendment.
This has to do, Mr. Chair, and thank you, about the many ways up to this point that we have done bear licensing for the bear hunters. And this is something that we worked out in principle between the Bear Guides Association, bear hunters, the DNR, and our office. And we believe it's a workable situation. I can give you it's a very short piece of the language starting on line 1.13. And we believe it's very workable and ask for your support.
Thank you. Any questions for Representative Dill? Okay, seeing none, Representative Dill renews his motion that the A8 amendment be passed. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted.
And
Representative Dill.
Well, I believe we have one last amendment that I'm aware of, the A10 amendment, which is the McNamara amendment.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment would clarify constituent of mine when working with the DNR, it was unclear what family meant, so we looked up in the dictionary, and we believe, working with the DNR, that the insertion of the word immediate would clarify what the DNR's intent was there, a family member.
Okay. Any questions for Representative McNamara? Okay. Seeing none, Representative McNamara renews his motion that the A-10 amendment be passed. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed? Motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. Representative Dill to the bill as amended.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the bill now before us, there are many provisions in it, quite a number of members. Probably the one controversial, there are still some items in here that are, I call them pressure points, that need to be negotiated, just as in the lands bill, as an example, between the Historical Society and the department. There are still items in the trapping provisions in this bill that we're trying to work out, and we're going to be working them out between now and the numerous committees that this has to go through. I think there is one provision in here that maybe needs some testimony that I'm aware of, and maybe some questions and answers, and that's regarding the moratorium on building boat launching ramps on lakes that have no public access today. Right now, members, there's around 5,300 lakes that have been determined to be fishable or have a reason to have a public access built on them. We are building, on average, according to former testimony from the department, two boat accesses a year on average. And this moratorium is for 5 years. The purpose of the moratorium is twofold. Number one, to give us additional time to work on exotic and invasive species management and education with the public, so that we can at least help to not continue to spread additional invasives and exotics into lakes that don't have public access. Now, granted, lakes can still get invasives and exotics even without a public access. But it certainly is known that that it can certainly happen from boats and motors and plugs and trailers and live wells and bait buckets and every other imaginable thing. But that certainly could happen from private land as well. Secondly, is this land, this discussion of discontinuing buying public land and not having easement management software and data and record keeping capability so that we have all of the records that are necessary for perpetually maintain, and we don't have the resources, obvious in the environment finance target, that we don't have the resources to pay for just, if any one thing, payments in lieu of taxes or payments that counties might get or cities might get because of their lack of revenue from the lost land and tax base. So this bill would not, if you already have a public access on your lake and there is a need for additional public access. So let's pick a large lake like Cass Lake. And if there was an additional, or Leech, let's take Leech, that's one I know that there's public access. There was additional need for public accesses, then you could go ahead and do that one because the DNR could go ahead and build those because that already has a public access. But for a lake that doesn't have public accesses, today we'd have a 5-year moratorium on that. Now what that means, members, is that over the next 5 years, an average of 2 accesses per year, that would be 10 accesses on 3,500 lakes that yet remain without public access, plus or minus a few. So there's about 2,000 somewhere in there in the number of public accesses, 1,600 to 2,000, somewhere in that range. 3,500 to 3,200 more lakes to do. We'd be delaying for 5 years 10 of those. And the focus could be moved to lakes that already have public access but need more public access because of their size or their geography or something like that. So that's the bill. I'll answer. That provision is in this bill. It's progressing in the Senate as well. And I'll be willing to ask any question or answer any questions. And I see Mr. Potter is here from the department. He may want to give us a very brief idea from the department, although I tried to represent the departments the best I could because I listened to his testimony.
Okay. And Mr. Potter?
Oh, he left, so he must think I did a good job.
Okay.
Nonetheless, that's kind of the crux of the issue.
Any questions for Representative Dill? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dill, Section 37, we seem to debate every year, and I just was wondering, is that included in the Senate bill?
37. Oh, well, Mr. Chair Eakin, and that is one of your very favorite provisions, and it probably isn't included in the Senate bill. And as you know, it was included in the House bill last year, and I believe you voted against it and on the House floor, and I would like to see it included again this year. Obviously, it's in my bill, but it'll be something that will have to be reconciled in the conference committee. And we've had a lot of discussion on that provision. Representative Hackbarth doesn't, if we're going to have two lines, he doesn't want to have another endorsement. Some people want to have an endorsement. Representative Wagenius would love to have the money in her budget this year if we had an endorsement of that nature. And so there's a lot of room for discussion on that provision.
Any other questions? Seeing none, Representative Dill, would you like to renew your motion?
Yes, I'd like to renew my motion. 3124 be recommended to pass as amended and sent to the Environment Finance Committee.
Actually, it'd be state and local government.
Oh, that's where we're going next? Sorry about that.
So Representative Dill renews the motion that House File 3124 as amended be recommended to pass to the Committee on State and Local Government Operations. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. The bill is passed.
Thank you.
Hey, Representative Davids. And I will move that House File 3362 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Commerce and Labor. Welcome, Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. House File 3362 makes a few modifications to the petroleum tank laws. If you look at the bill on the first page, what it does is it tightens down what a tank is for transport. In other words, the tank does not include mobile tanks, and Mr. Fisher will explain the reason for that, but it does not harm the petroleum transporters that are transporting it. Then if you look and on the next page, if you go down to line 2.19, it allows the Commissioner of Commerce to be able to take some extra action here. And the reason is because the Commerce Department administers the Petro Fund. And Mr. Fisher here, Joel Fisher, who I have with me, is the director of the Petroleum Tank Release Cleanup Fund, the Petro Fund. And items on lines 2.12 to 2.16, I have absolutely no clue what that does, and I'd like Mr. Fisher to explain it.
Okay, welcome, Mr. Fisher. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Joel Fisher. I'm the director of the Petro Fund program at the Department of Commerce. I'll start with the first provision with the definition of a tank. This is simply a clarification. Basically, back in 2003, the legislation was passed that made tanks and transport releases from tanks and transport eligible for reimbursement. Over the years, we have had some situations where releases that were arguably not from a tank were recorded. So this is basically just tightening up what a tank actually is and what would qualify for reimbursement from the Petro Fund. The second provision, 2.12 through 2.16, that one is it's kind of a confusing one, but basically what it is when we redid our rules in 2003, we have cost containment rules to keep costs down. And there's a provision in there that allows us to either increase or decrease the maximum costs based on inflation or deflation. In 2006, based on that legislation, our maximum costs needed to be increased by 10%. Unfortunately, when we went to the revisor's office to have them actually make the change, they indicated to us that they couldn't do it without legislative approval. the maximum cost is already in place, so we are reimbursing at the higher maximums. This language simply makes the public record accurate. If you looked at the website right now, the legislature's website, you would see the lower maximum costs still listed there. So it's simply a procedural move. And finally, under the adding the Commissioner of Commerce under the definition of commissioner there, basically, until recently, the Pollution Control Agency handled cost recovery. What that means is the Petro Fund transfers over a certain amount of money every year to the Pollution Control Agency to use to do cleanups in situations where there is either no responsible party identified or the responsible party is not willing to do the cleanup. The Pollution Control Agency, in those cases, does the cleanup and then goes back and does cost recovery on the responsible person if they can identify them. And this, the Petro Fund took over cost recovery based on a legislative mandate, and this would give the Petro Fund the ability to file environmental liens if necessary. And the environmental lien provision is something that we would only do at the last, as a last resort in obtaining those funds.
Thanks. Thank you. Any questions at all? Representative Saylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is for the testifier. Would this, in any case, it prohibit or cause problems for the PCA in doing some of the duties that they need to do if there are spills or problems with this? I mean, by adding the Commissioner of Commerce in, would that in any way cause the PCA not to be able to do their job?
Mr. Fisher.
Mr. Chair, Representative Saylor. It should have no impact on the Pollution Control Agency.
Representative Purcell. Yep.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With regard to sections, I guess 1.12 is where it starts, and changing some of the language there regarding transport and mobile tanks and the definition down 1.20 tank and transport. Can you tell me what are we trying to get at there? It's unclear to me.
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Purcell. What I'd like to do for the committee is have Mr. Fisher explain what those, we're not including mobile tanks, what some of the cases they've had are and why they're here in the first place.
Mr. Fisher.
Thank you. Mr. Davids, Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative Purcell, basically what has happened is when the definition was changed back in 2003, basically opened the door to all mobile tanks. And in the past couple of years, we've had some situations. I'll give you two examples. One was a situation where a boat stored on a trailer, the gasoline tank leaked. It was in storage, basically. And historically, we have not considered a fuel tank from a an actual fuel tank from a vehicle as a tank. Traditionally, we're looking at an underground storage tank or an above-ground storage tank, beneath the definition. The other example we have is a gasoline fuel tank was taken out of a pickup at an auto body shop. It sat on the ground, but still had some fuel in it. It was knocked over, and that was identified as a release. And so we're trying to tighten that up so that type of situation is not really what was the intent of the Petro Fund, was to clean up that kind of release. So.
Representative Purcell.
Is the current law release is still 5 gallon or thereabouts?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Mr. Representative Fisher. Purcell. That is correct.
Mr. Chair, and so would tank trucks, our Cenex truck there in Bemidji hauling fuel, that would that be exempt from this or be covered under this?
Mr. Fisher.
Mr. Chair, Representative Purcell. That would still fall under the tank and transport, and that's the exemption. So if a tank and transport has a release, a cargo tanker is driving and it tips over out on Highway 55 or Interstate 94, that still would qualify for reimbursement under this provision. That's what the change in 2003 was made, was to bring those types of tankers into the Petro Fund. So that still stays in.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, seeing none, I will renew the motion that House File 3362 be recommended to pass to the Committee on Commerce and Labor. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails, and the bill is passed. Thanks, Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Thank you, Mr. Fisher. Next, we will move on to House File 3315. Representative Bigham.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 3315 is the DNR technical bill.
And if you would move the bill.
And I can turn it over to Mr. Smith. I know it's maybe, but I don't know. Okay, so Mr. Smith, to go walk through the very good, non-controversial bill.
Okay, Representative Bigham moves that House File 3315 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Public Safety, Policy, and Oversight. So welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the day, please.
Mr. Chair, for the record, Major Rodman Smith, DNR Enforcement Operations Manager. There's basically three sections in the DNR Criminal Justice Bill. Section one is a provision for criminal penalties for those for the transportation of aquatic macrophytes. Right now, an aquatic macrophyte is basically a non-woody stemmed weed from a lake that's submergent or emergent through the water. And this would allow for a criminal option. Right now, there's a $50 civil penalty for transporting aquatic macrophytes, but there's no criminal penalty option available to us. One of the reasons we'd like to make this a criminal penalty is because currently transporting invasive species have criminal penalties with a fine of $50, but there, like I said, there is no fine for transporting aquatic macrophytes. Aquatic macrophytes, to give you an example, one of the problems we have is talking with the Attorney General's office and what our practice has been is right now if we see a boat trailer driving down the road and it's full of weeds, they look like lake weeds, since there's no criminal provision, we don't have the probable cause or the authority to stop that vehicle unless we can identify that the aquatic macrophytes on that trailer are somehow an invasive species. And for those people that know anything about some of these weeds, northern milfoil and Eurasian milfoil look very, very identical. You actually have to count the little how many stems are on each side to figure out whether it's Eurasian or northern milfoil. So in all practicality, when we wouldn't be able to stop a vehicle we didn't see leaving from and maybe an infested water if we saw them driving down the road. So this would give us that option. Section 2 is a change that is would allow the Division of Enforcement to be involved with the CYBER system. It's the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension's computerized program. That's the Comprehensive Incident-Based Reporting System. When this language was initially instituted, the definition of those folks that could join that were fairly narrow. It was just the sheriff's offices, Minnesota Municipal Police Departments, the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, and the State Patrol. Since this was passed, there have been other agencies that have come in and wanted to come on board. So recently they have, in the last few years, added the Metro Transit Police, the Department of Corrections, Fugitive Apprehensive Group, and some others, and we're just asking that we can also be added to this group that's allowed to access this database. And then Section 3 of the bill removes a sunset provision on the use of silencers for wildlife control operations. Currently, we use silencers on firearms, I guess, for lack of a better term, to deal with some of our wildlife control operations, mostly sharpshooting deer in the TB area, and then also the double-breasted cormorant in the Leech Lake area. The provision for us that allows us to use these silencers is sunsetting in June of 2011. We're just asking that we've had a few years. We have our policies in place, our MOUs in place as described in statute, and we feel is a good track record and like to have that sunset provision removed.
And with that, Mr. Chair, Mr. Smith would stand for questions.
Okay. Any questions Representative Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess just a kind of a clarification. I think it was in Section 1 with the sometimes the difficulty, as you mentioned, in distinguishing between different types of aquatic plant life, whether it's the Eurasian milfoil or another type of milfoil. If a person is stopped and it's determined that there is an invasive species there, is that cause to immediately write a ticket to that person, or is it, do they have the ability to rectify? I mean, sometimes if you have one, if you're able to identify a very small part of a species you don't want and the majority of it was something else, that would have been fine, but you had to look down to that very minute level, and for all practical purposes, the person thought they were doing the right thing. I want to know what the likely outcome is.
Mr. Chair, Representative Falk, we have the ability and we give our officers the authority to use their judgment, and you know, we're able to give that person a written warning. We could give them the citation, the civil penalty, or even a verbal warning. So I guess the officer, we give them the discretion and latitude to make that determination based on the totality of the circumstances at that time. So there are a lot of different tools we could use at that point to address that situation, going from, like I said, the educational of a verbal warning to a written warning to a criminal citation and then some type of civil penalty.
Representative Paul.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that. I just am nervous that if this opens up a doorway for just to issue additional citations. I mean, we want to make sure that we keep it within the context, and sometimes I am nervous that these things, if they're being used for whatever purpose, to go out and kind of penalize people more, can oftentimes put a sour taste in their mouth when it comes to our fishing and our boating activities, and we want to make sure that we're promoting those with as much of a positive attitude as possible.
Mr. Smith. Okay, any other questions? Okay, seeing none. Representative Bigham.
I'll renew my motion. I forgot where it's going, though. It's a long day.
I'm going to Committee on Public Safety.
Oh, I like that committee. I'm the vice chair. I'll renew my motion to have House File 3315 pass and be referred to the Public Safety Committees.
Okay, Representative Bigham renews her motion that House File 3315 be recommended to pass to the Committee on Public Safety. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. The bill is passed. And Representative Bigham, your next bill.
Yep, House File 3355. There is a technical drafting error that the department wanted us to fix, and if I could do that orally, Mr. Chair. Yeah.
Okay, just an okay. We will first move the bill. Representative Bigham moves that House File 3355 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Civil Justice. And Representative Bigham to the oral amendment. You'd want to move that next?
Yep, I will move the amendment, Mr. Chair. And it would read after the, we could remove, or after the word, after the period after roads. So on line 1.12, we're going to have it say drain plugs, comma, balers, comma, valves or other devices used to control the draining of water from ballast tanks, bilges, live wells.
You got a copy of that?
Yeah, Representative Bigham.
Yeah, we do have a copy. I was just reading it into the record.
Okay.
So, and live wells must be removed or opened while transporting watercraft on a public road. Period. Marine sanitary systems are excluded from this requirement.
Okay, and if the page could make copies of that, we could distribute to the committee members.
Okay. Yep, we'll get that copy.
In the meantime, you can, if there's any thing you want to say to the amendment.
No, it's just it just clarifies that we are adding not only the plug in the boat, but the live wells and bait stuff and.
So, and then we'll just wait until the, yes, Representative McNamara.
Well, maybe the major could go over, what's the recommended process if you want to keep your minnows? So how do they do that? They don't keep very well if you don't have any water, so how does that work?
Major Smith?
Really? Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, there's a couple different ways a person can do it, and it isn't an easy task. This language was brought to us and that we've got from several different public input meetings from several different stakeholders that feel that it's very important that to stop the spread of invasive species, that people need to drain their water. They need to drain the water out of their boats. They need to drain the water out of their minnow buckets and whatnot. And it really hits home when it's one of your lakes that you live on that now has a new invasive species added to it. So to answer your question more to the point, it isn't very it's not going to be the easiest task if you didn't plan ahead. You could bring some water with you to put those minnows in that are bottled or whatnot, or you just, if you don't, if you're done fishing for the day, you dump those minnows out.
Okay, Representative McNamara.
So I can follow up, and Major, I think I had this conversation with you or somebody. So you bring like a gallon jug with you from home or whatever, and then you have that in the boat. You dump the water out of the minnows, but you could like, I'm serious. They may not think I'm serious, but so you dump the water out, but you're okay leaving the wet minnows in the bucket, and then you can just add water to them? Or do you have to transfer the minnows out of that bucket?
Major Smith.
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, we'd be fine if you dump the water out and then put new water in.
Representative Bigham.
Mr. Chair, you can use worms like I do, night crawlers like I do. I mean, that would work. Mr. Chair, to the bill, as Mr. Smith said, this came as an idea from the testimony previously in your committee regarding the DNR and the transfer of invasive species. I do think this is a big deal, and we have two people. What the bill requires is just to remove the plug out of your boat so that you're not transporting the water, and then the other items that I said in the amendment, I can hold off, and then we can move the amendment. And I do have two testifiers that actually did travel a little bit to come, so I would appreciate if the committee would oblige for, if they could maybe speak for a couple minutes.
Sure.
One from the cabin and one from the resort owners. So they could come down at this time, and then we'll move the amendment.
And we do have a copy here of this is the amendment is on this page here.
Mm-hmm. The top, it's under A, and it's from drain all the way to requirement in the first paragraph.
The last three sentences.
Okay. Last three sentences under first paragraph under
Correct.
A.
Correct.
Does everybody see that?
Yep.
Everybody's got a copy?
Yep.
And again, that would be added on at the end of 1.12.
Yep, after the word road, after the period from the word roads.
Okay, everybody understand the amendment? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
Thank you, and, Mr. Chair. I just have the two testifiers, so if sure. You want to introduce yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jeff Forster, and I'm Executive Director of Minnesota Seasonal Recreational Property Owners, so cabin owners. And the board identified, you know, as cabin owners, we see firsthand the effects of the spread of invasive species. A lot of people, you know, have had invasive species introduced into their lakes, and it can be devastating in some cases. You know, we see this as a very modest proposal that could go a long way to stop the spread of invasive species. Something that costs the state many millions of dollars each year. So we support it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Forster. And any questions? Seeing none, thanks again.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I don't know if there's anybody else in the... Oh, thank you.
Come on down.
Come on down.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, representative, my name is Vern Wagner. I'm vice president for Anglers for Habitat. Anglers for Habitat was formed in part to bring the anglers' perspective and voice to these types of proceedings. And so I have some comments I would like to present. The first is that I think we all would like to find a solution to the current spread of invasive species, which I'll refer to as AIS. And we also know that there will be future infestations and future AIS problems that will be coming to Minnesota. Number two, we know that we don't have the desired angler boater compliance with existing rules. We know that there's a group of anglers out there that do not follow best practices. But we do have existing laws in place that currently ban transportation, water transportation, and have fines in place. We do not feel that increasing the fines or applying these rules statewide will result in the type of compliance that we're looking for here. It will be difficult to enforce. If you bring water from home, you better make sure it's well water and not chlorinated water, as many goldfish can attest to. Okay, so we have this one group of anglers who probably are not following best practices. And then what we also see is that we've got this other group, and we call them the not in my backyard folks, who do not want this coming to their area soon. And they're scrambling to come up with measures and moratoriums on accesses and increased fines to defer AIS. And we think stuck in the middle of this is you, the legislature, and the DNR. Fortunately for you, anything that you pass here, the DNR will get blamed for by anglers. So much for humor. Okay. We were formed in part to seek solutions and outcomes beyond any Band-Aid solutions. There needs to be recognition that desiring behavior from boaters, anglers, and hunters will require more than simple rulemaking. Now, here's what we're recommending. We're recommending that the legislature instruct the DNR to create a statewide education and training program, something that would train volunteers to be watercraft inspectors. I just spoke to the last presenter, Mr. Forrester, about some of the things they're planning in terms of having an online course about invasive species that might have an incentive attached to it when it came to licensing if you passed it. These types of measures, I think, educational measures are what we need at this point. We also would like to see that there is increased funding going to the DNR and the county sheriff's programs for interdiction. The difficulty, if we do have 6,000 lakes out there, and we make this type of rule that applies to every public access on every one of those lakes, and we have how many conservation officers? It's going to be difficult. Now, the snowmobilers, I think, have given us a good clue on how they went about it. They had trail ambassadors, and they've been able to funnel money to the county sheriff's departments to beef up some enforcement and a liaison with their group to the snowmobile folks. We think that this could be a really good idea here. If we could find ways to move funds, even if we had to surcharge anglers to come up with some dollars to do some of this. I think that anglers want to do their part. We're facing an ecological disaster in this state. If we look at the number of invasive species we have now, what they're doing, what the new ones are going to do, I think we need to do more than come up with approaches that only address small parts of the problem. We want to put pressure on government to prevent aquarium and plant trailers, traders and wholesalers from bringing more invasive species into the state through the aquariums and pet supply places. Sort of in conclusion, we don't feel that people who trailer boats should be forced to burden should be forced to carry the burden on their shoulders for all the AIS prevention here in Minnesota. They shouldn't be blamed for AIS. We as anglers think that we're in danger of losing our access, public access rights, if a comprehensive solution isn't found between the not in my backyard folks and the anglers who need to learn more best practices. We need to somehow get those groups together and try to find this solution. So in terms of this particular bill, Anglers for Habitat neither opposes or supports it. We think that it's well-meaning, but we think that it only addresses a small part of what needs to be addressed. So thank you very much for allowing us to testify.
Thank you.
Thank you. And any questions? Representative Junkie has.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. More a comment than a question. First of all, thank you, and you're exactly right. This is the low-hanging fruit. This isn't even close to what I'm hearing people propose as solutions, and I am concerned about the anglers that go back and forth from lake to lake and their needs too. But I went to the meeting in our area, and it was just packed. And it wasn't just lakeshore owners; it was anglers too that don't live on the lake but use the accesses. And they were all in agreement that a lot more needed to be done. You're right; education. Problem is resources. And I was glad to hear you say you support a surcharge. Right now, I know Senator Chaudhary's got a license fee increase, but I don't think it's going to invasive protection. You know. I think people would be happy to pay, and we'd hope that you work on future surcharges to get more money for education, for enforcement, for other things on this, because it's sorely lacking. You're exactly right. Our people in my area want boat check stations, honest to goodness, before you go from region to region or uninfested county. They're literally to that point, and so As you said, this is an explosive issue right now, and it's a big one in our state. So I want to thank Representative Bingham for bringing this. This is just two of the many things we heard at that meeting. And, in fact, since that meeting last week or week before, and I can provide it with you, I got a resolution from my county board supporting these things before you even had the bill here. And my lakeshore associations and my local angling groups are all on board with this. Again, you're right. We should all pull our plug when we go down the road, but the fact is not everyone does. And, it's very easy to bring a zebra mussel, down the road in water, but when the water's gone, the zebra mussel's gone basically in an hour or so of dryness. So, you know, it's something we can do. We've got zebra mussels that are 45 miles away in Alexandria to the Wilmer Lakes area, and we're very concerned. So, the increase in fines, I think, was long overdue. $50 was never enough. $250, some of my people would argue, is too low, but I think it's a nice compromise. And, you have a good bill, but it's I do recognize with you, this is the low-hanging fruit. There's so much more to do, and I'm glad to hear you say that, and we look forward to working with you in the future on other solutions.
Representative Bingham?
Thank you, and thank you, Representative Junkie, for the kind words about the bill. I just want to reiterate that this is already in rule. We're just putting in law, and I did fail to talk about the $250 fine going up from $50. The DNR supports the bill, and as you heard from the lakeshore owners and resort owners. They're very excited about this because if you have impaired waters, it affects their livelihood, their business, and so they're very excited about it as well. With that, if there are any other, I can stand for questions. Otherwise, I can renew my motion.
Any other questions? Seeing none, Representative Bigham.
I'll renew my motion that House File 3355, as amended, be referred to Environment Finance.
Civil Justice.
Oh, Civil Justice. I'm sorry.
Okay, Representative Bigham renews her motion that House File 3355, as amended, be recommended to pass and sent to the Committee on Civil Justice. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. The bill is passed. Thanks, Representative Bigham.
Thank you, members.
And the meeting is adjourned.